Go.
Yeah. Hello, everyone. This is Michael Vandervoort. We're here on Friday, June 7th, with another episode of Drive Through HR, and Robin was able to join us. So, welcome to the show, Robin. How are you doing today?
I am good. I am glad to be here and look forward to talking to someone who's north, literally north of the border, where it's perhaps a
Yeah,
little
because
cooler than we're having.
yeah. They yeah right he counts temperature in a completely different language, although not French. We'll introduce Jonathan in just a second. Anyway, yeah, me too. I've been thinking about heading up that way, maybe to Toronto for vacation this summer.
Ooh.
I don't know, I'm sorting through a few options. Are you going to take any vacation anytime soon?
We are the most non-vacationing family in terms of we don't go off on some great adventure anywhere. We never have. We'll do long weekends, but usually right in the area. We
Yeah,
don't go
well,
off
you
anywhere.
got the boat and you've got New Orleans, so there's some pretty good
That's
places to
right.
go. So anyway,
And the
well, and
dogs.
yeah, so Jonathan is not on vacation, but he's waiting patiently to get us here. So our guest is Jonathan Bennett. Jonathan, welcome to Drive Through HR. How are you today?
I am really great, Michael, and hi, Robin. It's great to be here.
We're glad to have you. So we seem to have a weather fetish. So what's
We
and
do.
since Robin mentioned temperatures, what's the temperature in Canada today, since that's where you're based?
I can only speak Celsius.
Yeah.
So I think it's about 20 Celsius today. So it's pretty mild. It's pretty nice where I am in Southern Ontario.
According to my computer clock, which also shows the temperature, it's 85 degrees Fahrenheit here in Tulsa, and it's probably a little bit warmer where Robin is, because she's even further south than I am in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. So
Yeah,
anyway,
we're hitting the 90s, mid 90s for the next several days.
yeah, we're about to start hitting summer here as well. So anyway, let's move on to
That's
warmer
Fahrenheit.
Fahrenheit. Yes. Let's move on to warmer topics. So today, Jonathan, we're going to talk about I guess kind of the emotional side of mergers and acquisitions. But before we kick into that, why don't you start out for our listeners by telling us a bit about yourself and what you do? You have kind of an interesting background, and we'd love to hear a little bit about that.
Yeah, for sure. So these days, I'm an executive and leadership coach, which I sort of shorthand to I'm kind of like a work therapist. I spend a lot of time listening to CEOs and C-suite founders, the inner lives and the inner big problems that they wrestle with. I use a blend of trusted advisory kind of approaches and also coaching in my services. So some traditional coaching stuff. So lots of listening, lots of asking questions and drawing people out, trying to understand what's behind the thing that's really driving the big issue. But I also offer lots of practical solutions. I've been a CEO and a founder before, and so I'm able to draw on lessons learned and the lessons of all of my other clients to often provide suggestions and options. So, I don't just leave people hanging with their own thoughts. I do tend to game out some potential solutions with my clients, and yeah, so that's my work. It's a real privilege to be able to do it. It's quite intimate work.
Do you have like a name for your practice, or is it just like you as an individual coach?
Yeah, my company is called Clearly Then, I mean, there's a goofy story behind it, but I won't bore you with it. But yeah.
Cool. Well, thanks for sharing that, Robin.
And I'm going to ask you to bore us with the story because
Oh,
I'm
okay. So
interested.
I wondered as soon as I said that, I'm like, I've just created
You
some
should tell the story.
narrative tension here. I'm gonna have to tell them. So yeah, it is a little goofy, but so way back when, I have an undergrad in English, and of course, I grinded out a lot of essays, and my now wife and I at the time would be she equally was writing lots of English essays, and so we would get to the end of papers. And we would want to leave and be done. And she would say, "Where are you at?" And I'd be like, "I'm almost at clearly, comma, then, comma," which was the beginning of the last paragraph, which sort of came back and it became a kind of shorthand, 30 years later, between two partners, you have a kind of shorthand, became that for us. And for me, it was like, well, what am I doing with the last paragraph of my work career? And so it was sort of like I'm at the beginning of the last paragraph, and that's pretty much where it came from. And obviously, there's a kind of like a conclusion sort of focus, a kind of wrapping up that's sort of implicit and clearly then, which is what I like to think that I do with my clients is help them solve problems.
So are those commas Oxford commas or otherwise? No, joking,
Let's
joking.
not start that debate on
Yeah,
the internet. My
because yeah, we've
God.
never done a show about the Oxford comma, but maybe that's an episode we should do someday, Robin. Although I have no idea how it
Heather
relates to
Bossing would
HR.
like that
That's what I was
episode.
thinking of, Heather. Yeah, for Heather's a friend of ours. He was an attorney, but largely a writer, and does a lot of different things. But she's a big proponent of the Oxford comma. So Jonathan, you mentioned being internal, and you also mentioned having your own business. So I thought those were, like, as you said, sort of previous acts, I guess, if you want to cast it that way. So tell us a little bit about that experience. And you've built and sold businesses, and you work with a coach. What were your big takeaways from going through all those professional life experiences?
Yeah, in the rearview mirror, it all makes sense. So as I was doing it, it certainly didn't. I was bouncing through all kinds of things. I started my kind of career. All I wanted to do was write novels and poetry, and I did. I wrote 7 books, and I feel really proud of the literary work that I've done over the years. But here's the truth, kids. Poetry doesn't pay. So.
Shocking.
Shocking. And younger me didn't really put it all together. So what I did along the way is I ended up in a kind of communications career. I was writing, I was editing, I got into public relations, I got into government relations, marketing and branding, and I found myself eventually on the senior team of a big regional hospital. And my portfolio was really vast, and we went through a big capital build. And so it was like 3 free MBAs through that time. I became a real governance nerd. I spent a ton of time with boards and sat on boards. And so, I kind of hit a point where I just sort of thought I want to consolidate this. And at no point did I really ever say, gee, whiz, I hope I end up as an executive of a hospital. Like I just sort of ended up there through a series of happenstance and probably some hard work and no doubt a bit of privilege. And so there I was. And I quit because I thought I need to be in control of my own destiny here. And it really wasn't matching the kind of person I was and where I was at in my life. I have 2 kids and they were very little at the time. My eldest is autistic. And I was just working very, very long hours at the hospital, and everything in a hospital feels urgent and important. And my family was just coming second, and that wasn't good enough. So I needed to do something pretty drastic, and I did. I quit, and I thought, how hard could this consulting thing be? Pretty hard, it turns out. But for me, I just sort of hung out a shingle. And I thought I really wanted to focus on doing strategy work and strategic planning. And I had worked in my earlier career a lot with nonprofit organizations. And so I felt they were always really pretty poorly served by management consultants. And so that was really where I niched in. And over the next 10 years, I built a company. We became a B Corp. We served hundreds of nonprofits across the country, did countless strategic plans. We got into middle management training as well. And it was an amazing ride, a really amazing ride to build a social purpose company that had a really important workplace culture and became a really well-known firm in its space. And about 2.5 years ago, I sold the company to one of my colleagues, so we did a management buyout, and that's when I reinvented myself as a coach.
Awesome. Hey, Robin, I have just a quick follow-up. Jonathan, could you just briefly, and I don't know what the legal definitions are, but can you just briefly explain what a B Corp is for those that may not know? Because not everybody deals with that.
Yeah, absolutely. So a B Corp is a kind of external certification, a kind of accreditation on corporate social responsibility. So if you're a company, you have to be a for-profit company, and your deeply held purpose is broader than just being profitable, which is to say you care about the environment, you care about social justice, a living wage, all of those kinds of things, then a B Corp is one way you can go about evaluating yourself against best practice, holding yourself to some standards, like any kind of accreditation. Once you're all in, you're all in. There are 7,000 of them around the globe and growing. And of course, they put on fabulous conferences and lots of amazing things once you get into that community. It's quite challenging to get in, though. The gatekeeping is pretty real. The evaluation process is extremely rigorous. But for those that get in, the rewards are pretty great and very focused, really helps with lots of different aspects of running business. I'm happy to speak more about it if you'd like.
Yeah, thanks for that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And one of the things that struck me as I've, you know, read through your website and the work that you're doing is your statement of your belief that businesses can be, should be a force for good, and operate ethically and treating people with dignity, treating all with dignity. How does that outlook, you know, sort of propel the coaching work that you do? How does that lay the foundation?
Yeah, I really appreciate the question, Roman. It's kind of a magnet for me, putting those sorts of personal statements out there in the world. I tend to attract people for whom they're attractive, you know, and it tends to repel people that aren't going to be a great fit for me. There are lots of business coaches out there and who are all about grinding out every last bit of margin and finding out, you know, like getting people at the lowest possible cost. And that's not me. There's nothing wrong with it. Well, maybe there is, but like for the purposes of this example, like, you know, they can go to them and that's cool. But, you know, what I offer is a place for those who are trying to build companies that do more than make them a good living, that it's not all just about taking, that it's about putting something back, whether that's into your community, whether that's into your workplace culture and the kind of employer you want to be, mm-hmm. whether that's into your supply chain, whether that's into your environment locally or more broadly. These things are important to me as a human, and I like to surround myself, and I'm privileged enough to be at a point in my career where I can choose to design my time to match with people that have similar values and are on a similar kind of journey. And it's not to say that, you know, B Corps are perfect. They're certainly far from it. And lots of the folks that I work and coach with are just simply trying to get better in these regards. Like they're, you know, they've got a lot of work ahead of them. But they put their hand up and said, this feels like a kind of framework that they want to move towards. And so it's great work. And as I say, it's a privilege to be able to do it.
Mm-hmm. I'm going on a tangent, just tangent warning. The B Corp question and working with C-suite people, and like we have all these larger than life billionaires, and I don't want to make this a political discussion, but I'm just curious, like, of like, you know, so you've got like, say, Mark Cuban, who does a lot of stuff with prescription drugs and making them affordable. And then you've got someone like Elon Musk, who, you know, wants to change the world, but also has some very sort of, you know, I don't know, depending on your political persuasion, problematic views, et cetera. And so they kind of move larger than life. Is there anybody out there, Jonathan, that I'm not asking you to name a client, obviously, but is there anybody out there right now, like, that you would call out as, you know, an example of somebody that you admire from your personal set of ethics, which is, you stated it very well in a very short time. So you see some leaders out there that are good examples of what you think leaders should be?
Yeah. My mind goes to Scott Galloway, Professor Scott Galloway, who spends a lot of time communicating about business. He's a professor at Stern. He is somebody who's obviously got progressive values. He also isn't scared of talking about making money. And he is somebody that thinks these things can exist simultaneously, that, the money itself isn't bad. What you do with it or how much of it you hoard can be bad. And, he's sort of like, he has these, like, and he's also quite bombastic and says, slightly outrageous things at times. So not probably everybody likes him. Even people that are progressive probably don't like him 100%. But you can't look away. You know, he's one of those people that just tends to draw you in and occasionally raises some very interesting questions. So I like what he's putting out there. I like there's another academic and thinker, Alison Taylor, who is also out of Stern School of Business. She writes a lot about ESG, so environmental social governance, and you know, everything that's going on in the corporate world around these issues. She's a very balanced, extremely thoughtful you know, voice in this discussion, which I find really welcome.
Yeah, thanks. I think Galloway does a podcast with Kara Swisher. I think he, yeah. So, I don't remember the name of it, but yeah, interesting guy for sure. They do, they're, and they have great guests on. So, yeah. Anyway, so sorry, Robin, I jumped on a tangential question.
No, that's okay. I'm going to get us to one thing that we know we wanted to talk about with Jonathan, and that's this interlap of organizational culture, workplace culture, and mergers and acquisitions in particular. You know, we're HR folks, we're an HR show. If we get a nickel for every time we talk about culture over the years, we'd have a lot of money. But then you layer on that time when someone may be going through some M&A activity. So it's an extraordinarily broad topic. But what are the, maybe we start big and then we drill down to something. What are the, for those HR leaders, those organizational leaders, but especially on the HR side, the people side, what are the key things that someone needs to keep in mind when going through an M&A around culture, around workplace culture? What are the and what should they think about at the beginning?
It's a time of change. So bring your change management brains to this topic, that as soon as a company is up for sale or a founder is thinking about selling, everybody in the company, when they learn about it, just moves into, you know, me, 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 me. They can't even hear what you're talking about. And so taking the time to let people digest information, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent to them, will be a really important early phase, and it will take longer than you think. HR folks, along with the founders themselves, have often been on the inside with information ahead of time. And so, you know, folks work with me, and they'll say things like, you know, I don't know, I don't get it. Like, it's been 2 weeks. Like, what's wrong with them? Like, this is going to be great, or it's going to be fine, or nothing will change, or whatever the story is in their
Those are
head.
all lies, by
They're all lies.
the
And before I get to the lies, because I get to the lies, I say to them, how long, when did, like, tell me when you first thought about putting your company on the market, or when you first learned that this was going to be for sale. And they'll go, well, I don't know, it was a couple of years ago. And I'm like, great. So you've had a couple of years to think this through, and you want them to digest it, process it, and be cool with it in 2 weeks. Like, come on, give them some time. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, there's an awful lot contractually, legalistically, that can't be said during the negotiation stage. People are not idiots. They will figure out that you are, that something is going on in the kitchen, right? Like, they'll figure it out that, you know, why are we, you know, buffing our EBITDA? Why are we making this thing look so great? Why are these people taking tours? Right? Like, they're going to figure it out. You know, to the extent that you can, begin to communicate what you can communicate, and at least communicate some timelines for when you can communicate more. So even if you can say, unfortunately, we can't get into it, but there's, you know, some interesting and important things afoot, the minute we can say more, we will. We'll certainly get back to you and in 2 weeks' time and give you an update, even if there's nothing new to say. So even committing to communicating nothing is better than communicating nothing. So I usually try to help folks with internal comms, just like reminding them what it's like to feel completely beholden and trapped. Because if you don't get into the mindset of your employees, they will leave, or they will start, cruising LinkedIn. And none of that is good. You really don't want that. You want to, keep their attention and keep their focus, and hopefully keep their loyalty through the transition. Because, your awesome team is probably one of the things that, if you've done a nice job of scaling and you've extricated yourself from the business, as an operator, then that awesome team is one of the kind of assets that you're putting on the market to sell.
I've been through a couple of different M&A things, and it seems as if companies get focused. This kind of goes back to Robin's mention of the culture part. The due diligence and counting the numbers and counting the widgets and who's going to own what. Businesses are pretty good at that, and yet they seem to routinely lose track of the people. At least in the experiences that I've had, they routinely lose track of the people, or they fail to take into account sometimes, like if you're say you're being acquired by a former competitor, there's a lot of rough edges and elbows that show up because you're used to fighting with each, right? And so the people, even with good intentions, the people issues often get, to your point, they get overlooked, or they get lost in the shuffle of all the other legal and financial things. So how do you help clients kind of think about that?
I think just naming it is a really important thing. Like, just dig deep into the empathy and the honesty. Your example is a great one. This firm across town is going to be acquiring us. They've been our, we've lifted them up as the thing against which we've competed for, a generation maybe, right? And now they're going to become our friends. Like, really? Overnight? So just being able to talk about that openly and honestly. The biggest thing, and we joked earlier about the lies that we tell ourselves, that nothing is going to change. Please don't say that. It's almost never true. Like, you've got this precious workplace culture, and I can't tell you the number of founders that I've heard say things like, "And the reason why I'm choosing these guys to buy us is because they're not going to touch anything, and they have the same values and all of that." Okay, great, terrific, and I believe you, and it's not true. Like, they will come in. They will have a different flavor of vanilla. They will have a different flavor of how they do things. There are going to be consolidations. There's going to be a different tech stack. There'll be we don't need two directors of finance. Like, our inventory is going to get melded, or our service offerings are going to get blended, and some things are going to drop away. And look, let's hope it's participatory. Let's hope we're building new things together and in a dreamy sort of scenario. But guess what? People and power dynamics and time and change will all mean that probably it won't look the same as it used to in 3 years. So don't make promises that are going to ring false, because it's just one more thing that angry people grab onto and hold on to. Not only did they, break a promise when I joined this company, because they said it was going to be A, B, and C, and then a few years later they went and sold it. They told me it wasn't going to change, and it did. And so people can, like, grab onto these things. And maybe there's not a lot you can do through all of this as a leader at times, but I think that there's a lot more we could be doing about being as honest as we can up front with what's just at play, and help people manage what's in front of them.
And
I
I think
I think the where we fall, and I say the collective we fall down is ensuring there's this through line of communication and milestone touch points well after, the acquisition date was July 1st. Well, people are going to lament and mourn for what used to be, for well beyond 30 days that, maybe the C-suite wants everybody to get over it in. And
Oh, so
so
true.
finding that, it comes back to that humanity piece, I think, which is there's one thing to say, this is what it's going to be, and now we're doing XYZ in this way. And how that's transitioned, that's ongoing. But that human part of it, where people have just this fondness for what was before, and they mourn that and they miss that. And I've seen too many organizations that just, okay, stop that now. We're not Acme LLC anymore. We're big company Y, and so stop it. And that hurts people.
Yeah, it really does. You used the word that mourning, and I mean it's grief, right? It's grief. Grief looks different for all of us at different times. I often joke, it's like companies ride the Kubler-Ross curve, the grief curve, and we move through anger and denial and even though the grief folks will tell you that that's also not really true, these things don't happen in some sort of smooth way. What we do know is that there are, very a variety of reactions that do shift over time, and just giving people the grace and space to make the change and allow it to incorporate into their human selves is really, I think, what you're talking about, Robin. Like we just need to show up as empathetic leaders and allow people to go through what it is. And for those leaders out there that say yes, but there's got to be eventually a time limit to this. Like people can't weaponize their grief either at work. But somewhere between 2 weeks and 2 years, there's an appropriate cutoff point. And it's not 2 weeks and it's not 2 years. But if you've built a really powerful workplace culture, and it reacts extremely strongly and rejects this takeover, well, like, congratulations. Like, that's your workplace culture that you built, doing what it was trained to do. It's rejecting things that aren't it's like itself. And so, of course it's hard. Of course it's going to take time. And to just try and stay as meta as you can, get up and out of it and look at what's going on from a more objective point of view will probably help you as a leader, as an HR person that's trying to kind of understand, like, why is everybody behaving and doing all the things right now? Well, they're just going through it.
The probably the one that I thought was the most successful one I was ever involved with, as a cog in a big machine, was very transparent. And sometimes, to your point, one of the points you made earlier, it wasn't really that we were like, this is what's going to happen. Here's A, B, C, D. It was like, we don't know exactly how this is all going to end up. We're going to close some sites. We're going to open some new ones. We're going to combine some. We don't know where those are yet, but that is going to happen. And we know that's going to make you feel tense and anxiety. But we promise that as soon as we know, we will tell you when we can tell, and it was, so it was a very kind of, transparent, methodical communication where we could reveal what we could reveal as soon as we could. And people, not everybody experienced it in the same way, but the vast majority of it appreciated that. And it actually helped us more, I think, morph into kind of a hybrid culture. Like it started the creation of our new combined culture, if you will. And that worked really well. And I think that falls in line with some of the things that you've been saying. But we've kind of wandered through most of the questions that we had teed up, Jonathan, and I was kind of thinking maybe we would wrap up with, and it doesn't have to be solely through the lens of M&A, but like when you work with your clients in the C-suite, what are the most common challenges? I mean, I guess a little bit on the M&A side, but then in general, and we'll kind of wrap up with that afterwards.
Yeah, well, like the M&A side is just a very acute example of a whole series of issues, which I sort of boil down to and distill as like loneliness. Leaders that are at the top and HR practitioners that are close to the top and spend a lot of intimate time with a CEO know this too. It's lonely. And it's lonely because there's only so much that you can tell your shareholders or your board of directors without prematurely worrying them or engaging them over in the operations. There's only so much you can take home to your partner or your spouse or your roommate without them, you know, without everybody getting stressed out at home or boring them. There's only so much you want your team to know, because you don't want to freak everybody out and have everybody stampede through the door if, you know, you can tell things aren't going great. And so what do you do with it? Like, what do you do with it? Whether you're selling, whether you're thinking about selling, whether you're growing, whether you're seeing a dip in sales, whether you're a key person just left, you're kind of holding onto this all by yourself. And maybe you founded this thing, maybe you just run this thing, but it feels like it's on your shoulders. And you're the one that's got to find the strength in the legs and keep going up the hill. Mm-hmm. And it is exhausting work. Mm-hmm. It's really tiring and it's hard work. And so mm-hmm. I like to meet that person right there. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is just listening. Mm-hmm. A lot of it is just catching it and validating that they're trying the right things, that they're going through the right steps, and that they're just not at the destination yet. Mm-hmm. Some of it is, I think you're missing a spot here. Like, maybe let's just, you know, dig in there a little bit. Maybe let's game out some different ways of doing the thing that you're doing. You're being really reactionary, or that's a very emotional response. I wonder whether we can think of some different ways to achieve these things. So I can be practical at times, but, you know, a lot of it is just good, deep listening and a lot of validating and being there when people need to feel heard and feel seen. And mm-hmm. I know big, tough CEOs are supposed to be able to do all this and, you know, not break a sweat, but it's not true. They're people too, and they're at times outsized in their personalities, like you were saying earlier, Michael, which only helps them to get in their own way. And so, you know, I like to be able to be there for them at these inflection points and to be able to, you know, help them through it.
Cool. We're just about out of time. Robin, you want to wrap us up?
Well, I will wrap us up, and thank you so much for Jonathan for joining us. I have to throw this in as well, because you're probably living your best life right now because of the cricket going on, because I know you're a big cricket fan. So
I'm a huge cricket fan, and I'm absolutely living my best life.
We've got it on at home here. We're Team South Africa here at the schooling household. So
the U.S. beat Pakistan yesterday.
Yes.
Like nobody in the U.S. even cares. Not nobody, but I mean, it's like, it's not the biggest sports story of the year here, which is sad.
It should be.
I know.
It really should be. Don't trigger me on cricket, or we'll be on live for the next 2 hours, guys. Like, but you know, I grew up in Australia, so cricket's a big part of my life. And so thank you for the shout out, Robin. I appreciate it.
Yep. Who do you play next?
Australia's playing England tomorrow, so we'll see how that goes. That's a rivalry for the ages, that one. Yep. So yeah.
Well, I think South Africa plays, I think the Netherlands next, I think.
Yeah.
I think that's this weekend. So
it's also a good rivalry.
We've got it on like all day when it's going on in the TV on the patio, so my husband can go and watch it on his breaks. But anyway, so that was a little diversion there, but thank you, Jonathan, so much for joining us. And as we wrap up, in addition to the links that we'll have on the show episode, let our listeners know how they can connect with you, where they can find you online, and hopefully get some folks that want to carry on a conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm very active on LinkedIn. So feel free. I'm a real human. I answer DMs. Feel free to reach out on LinkedIn. I post regularly. My website is clearlythen.com. I spend an hour with just about everybody as a intro trial call. So if you want to try out coaching with me and just learn a bit about it and what I've said today resonates with you, feel free to reach out.
Awesome. Thanks a bunch. We really appreciate the chat and having you as a guest. I'm going to go ahead and end the show, and have a great weekend. Hopefully the cricket goes well for your squad. Is it a squad or a team?
It's the same.
Same. Okay.
All right. Yeah. Thanks, mate.
Thanks, Bye. Robin. Talk soon. Bye.
Bye.